The 2021 Survivor Series is now in the books, and we've got a lot to talk about tonight, including one of the biggest surprises of the night, and that was No Rock. We're going to talk about that and a lot more right after this.
This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my idol.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody. Y'all just saw Survivor Series. I did too. And I've only got a few words for you, man. It's not suck it. It's where the hell's The Rock? Right? That's on the minds of everybody, including those who paid their hard-earned money and spent all their time and are going to be getting up early for work tomorrow that are like, hey, where the hell's The Rock? It's kind of maddening. And I mean that because while The Rock being there was never announced officially by WWE, you would have thought it was at all but foregone conclusion he was going to show up last night, or tonight, I should say. And with all the video package throughout the show, all the talk about The Rock throughout the show, even the the use of The Rock Bottom by Roman Reigns during his matchup, all the Easter eggs planted, literally Easter eggs planted, so much was just driven towards The Rock being there, and he ended up being a no-show. Of course, Roman Reigns gets the victory, and then he leaves, and no, if you smell, nothing. Nothing. I mean, I think the theft of the Easter egg is probably tied to The Rock somehow. The good news is that if you are in Brooklyn and you want to purchase yet another ticket to Monday Night Raw, you may get your payoff there. This storyline of the egg that has gone missing, the $100 million egg gone missing, I think somehow, some way, will be tied back to The Rock, and we will see him tomorrow night on Monday Night Raw in some way, form, or fashion. Now, I know Roman Reigns is not a part of Monday Night Raw. I know that. And The Rock is not drafted anywhere, obviously, but it has been announced and was announced that both groups of SmackDown and Raw stars will be at Raw tomorrow night. So that allows Roman to come on the show. We're all going to pretend the draft doesn't exist for yet another time. But if it's to get The Rock back, I'll understand it, or really be more accepting of it, that they're just violating their rule again. You know, this is like the fifth time since the draft has taken place. But if it's to get The Rock back on TV in Brooklyn to set up a match with Roman going into WrestleMania, sign me up. It just almost felt like, at least for tonight, that WWE betrayed us. You know, like they heavily teased him being there. All this, the innuendos, all the Easter eggs they dropped, including a $100 million one. This just was, it was maddening, actually. You were kind of pissed off at the company, and I'm sure the people in Brooklyn are chanting bull blank bull, you know what, right? I'm sure as they're exiting the building, they're chanting that. They were chanting Rocky in the middle of the matchup between Roman Reigns and Big E. And you know what? And what was honestly, I think, an excellent match with Big E and Roman Reigns. I think The Rock's potential presence in that arena was kind of distracting from, again, what was otherwise a really good match. And I don't think that was a great idea, a great job by WWE with so much heavy Rock promotion and the everything that they dropped throughout that night to have them, you know, essentially say all but, hey, The Rock's coming after the match to confront Roman Reigns, right? Maybe they have a stare off, maybe, you know, whatever. Nope, no Rock, nothing. And I kept waiting and waiting. We all did. For that music to hit as Roman Reigns is holding up his championship. But boy, did this also felt like a really long pay-per-view, didn't it? Really long. I don't know. And I know that it only started at 8 o'clock and it went until 11:30, so 3.5 hours. If you don't include the pre-show, 4.5 hours. And then if you go to the arena, travel time to and from. I mean, it's a day's adventure, even though the show is at night for most people. So, you know, it just felt so long. And maybe it was because the matches were so much longer than normal. And I don't know if it's a complaint or just an observation, because I often complain that, and a lot of fans do too, that matches are too short. Well, in this case, it felt like every match was 45 minutes long. I felt like everybody was having an Iron Man match. It's like the Iron Man match stipulation was just a part of everyone's stipulation. I don't know. And again, not that I didn't think any of the matches were garbage, or to quote Crisis, trash. I really didn't. I thought that most of them were very solid, very physical, especially Becky and Charlotte. My God, they beat the holy hell out of each other. And I'll get to that match in a second. We'll start in sequential order and go from the beginning match to the final match, the main event, and circle back there. But I thought that overall it was a good wrestling product night. Despite the manufactured brand rivalry, I thought that the matches that the performers did really well, really well. And they put in 110% in most cases. There were some hiccups. I mean, the 25-man Battle Royal, which is a cluster blank to begin with, had its moments of just like, huh? The women's 5-on-5 was a bit sloppy and bizarre at times. So we'll talk about that. Again, overall, just to kind of hit on a few low points, there were more high points, I think, than low points. I'd give this pay-per-view a very mild thumbs up. Decent pay-per-view. That's what I'd say. I think if The Rock had come out, most people's issues with the pay-per-view would have just been erased magically by simply The Rock coming out. And again, people were so mad. I mean, I can't imagine if I was in the arena and I spent my money to go down, drive 3 hours to Brooklyn with the thought that The Rock is going to be there. And then I get there and they're teasing it throughout the night. And you're getting all hyped. And then the show just ends and I'm told to go home. You shouldn't go there with the sole purpose of just only seeing The Rock, because then you're setting yourself up by putting all eggs in one basket. But I think a lot of people did have the expectation that The Rock was going to be there. Now, again, he could be there in Brooklyn tomorrow night. Absolutely. The Rock could be on a flight right now to Brooklyn for tomorrow night's Raw to set up a WrestleMania match with Roman. And if I was WWE, why the hell not? Why wouldn't I? Why would you not want to set up this matchup? People say, oh, it's L.A. Yeah, so what? Okay, L.A. is known for what? Movies, Hollywood. So? Right? Like, it's not known for its wrestling history, generally speaking. Dallas has way more of a wrestling history than does Los Angeles. So I understand that The Rock, oh, he's in Hollywood. Oh, cool. No, again, this is a wrestling show. This is not a movie. So I'm more interested to me in when it happens than where it happens. I personally don't really care too much if it's in LA, just for the Hollywood connection doesn't do anything for me. Plus, why would you also not want to strike while the iron's hot? The landscape of WWE in April of 2023, how do you know what that's going to look like? You don't. Vince doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow night on Raw. What makes you think that he's going to know what the landscape's going to look like 16 months in advance? It's not going to happen. So you also don't know if Roman's going to be heel. What if there's an injury? What if The Rock gets injured somehow, maybe on a movie set, working out? You know, what if a better opponent somehow comes across or comes along for Roman? There's just way too many variables. With something like this aligning, you take it when it happens and you go. So hopefully WWE is able to work something out with The Rock. It seems as if I would still believe that this is still on track. I'm just really shocked they didn't have it happen here tonight on one of their big four pay-per-views in one of the biggest markets that they have, at a time when people start to think about WrestleMania. Very puzzling. Maybe The Rock wasn't available tonight. Perhaps that was the case and he was on site filming and he's taking an early flight to Brooklyn tomorrow morning. That's my best assumption. But this was weird. This was weird with The Rock. So that's all I really have to say about The Rock, because he didn't show up. It's hard for me to talk about somebody that wasn't there. But it's on a lot of people's minds in frustration and anger and kind of the betrayal by WWE. But I think tomorrow those that are in Brooklyn will be pleasantly surprised. If they don't pull the trigger at all on this, then bad job out of WWE. Just a bad job. You know, if you want to tribute to Rock, he has 100 specials on the network. You can mention it briefly in a video package and leave it there. But to thread it throughout the night, and then you have the rock bottom used and have Paul Heyman kind of dropping hints and have, you know, just everybody talking about it. It just bad, bad, bad job if this ends up not manifesting and this was all like just to get people talking about The Rock for whatever reason and promoting his movie with Ryan Reynolds. What the hell's Red something? I mean, who cares? I'm sorry, but every time I see that, if I'm watching a wrestling show and I see The Rock in a movie, I'm like, yeah, I don't really care. Like, is he here? Is he going to come? Is he here? Is he going to rock bottom somebody? Is he going to give somebody the people's elbow? Is he going to talk smack? Because that's all I give a damn about. You know, I don't know. That's what I think about when I see The Rock and his endless promoted movies when he's around WWE. So it's just, as wrestling fans were like, yeah, wonderful. You have a movie. I don't give a damn. What are you doing? Are you in the arena? Are you here? That's what we care about. That's what I want to see, especially if you're in person. You don't give a damn about the movie he's coming out with. I'm sorry, most people don't. Yeah, he's very successful in Hollywood, and many of us may go see his movie. But when you're watching a wrestling show, you're like, yeah, stop it. Is he here? Yes or no? Right? I know because I've been there in that position many times and been disappointed many times in person by WWE with big stars that you thought were there and they're not, and they tease it. All right. Well, let's start off at the beginning of the pay-per-view talking about Becky Lynch and Charlotte, because Becky Lynch and Charlotte, as we all know, and as was alluded to without actually saying it by the announcers, which the announce team was all over the damn place tonight. I have to say, I know I keep getting sidetracked. I'm like trying to go in the order and then I get sidetracked about something, but I want to make sure I make this point. I have never been so confused about an announce team in my life. It felt like there were 600 people on the announce team tonight. It felt insane. And I understand they were trying to do all combinations and make sure everybody has a different team to work with, but it's also Raw and SmackDown. It was too much. And also Pat McAfee, look, I understand he brings energy. I'm a fan of Pat McAfee in terms of just freshening things up at the announce booth. And Michael Cole has said on record that he had revived his career. Wonderful. Pat McAfee at times draws too much attention to himself. Instead of trying to help the talent get over, he brings a lot of that attention to himself. And I think that he has crossed that line tonight where it was more about him at times than the product. And I don't think it was on purpose, but he's sometimes too loud, too hyped up, too amped up, where it's just like, all right, bro, like, can you just chill out, okay? Relax. You're a grown-ass man. Relax. It's just the strum of a guitar. Chill out, okay? I know sometimes I just want to just shake him and be like, dude, shut up, okay? Please. I don't know. I think he got amped up a little too much. And, you know, I don't think he was by his, you know, having ill intentions with that or anything. I think he was just doing what he knows gets him attention and what has been generally positively received is his high energy. But he just took it overboard many times tonight. That said, okay, let's get into beyond the insane combinations of announcers that was just too much to follow, and I think actually detracted from the product because the voices are changing, the teams are changing, the dynamic and the chemistry between everybody's changing because it's a very extremely fluid commentary team, which again, not good. It's not a good thing to do. You should have just had one representative from Raw, one from SmackDown, call it a day. The rest get the night off. I mean, just simple, really. You could have just had Pat McAfee and Michael Cole. I know, well, they're from the same brand. But you get my drift. You could have just had one color, one play-by-play, and that's it. Again, Pat McAfee and Jimmy Smith, right? Why not? Try it. So, all right. Charlotte and Becky. Wow. Physical. And, yeah, and another roll-up finish. Because God knows that you can't just somehow get a clean victory. It feels like a lot of these women's high-profile matches are ending in roll-ups for days. I can't even tell you the amount of just anger I have for roll-ups at this point, because they're such a cheap cop-out, cowardly finish by creative. That's all they are. Because otherwise you would have clean finishes most of the time instead of these roll-ups. But anyway, I digress. Both women put in 120% effort and absolutely still have chemistry together. The fans were into it from the beginning. It was a lot of Becky chants. I think that most fans were behind Becky, not behind Charlotte. It's the intended response. But the one thing I'll say, because you know there's always a but, beyond the roll-up nonsense, I think Becky winning was the right move. But it felt almost as if they were trying to make it look like a shoot instead of it actually ever turning into a shoot. Now, they did give each other certain shots that looked to you like, you know, like that was stiff, but it looked controlled stiff. What didn't look controlled stiff and looked like a shoot was the interaction that Charlotte had with Nia Jax a few months back before she was let go and had her arm broken and was, of course, let go. There are certain shots like that that's what everyone went, whoa, something was real there. That is different than the controlled stiff punches and kicks and headbutts that Becky and Charlotte were throwing at one another. And the amount of no selling too, by the way, across the board and the pay-per-view tonight of no selling kicks to the face and headbutts was a little egregious. I mean, at times it was almost as if it had, like, you know, supercharged your opponent where, you know, somebody would get super kicked and they would like pop back up a few seconds later. And it's like, you just got kicked in the jaw. That's a knockout shot. I mean, Shawn Michaels used that for how many years, how many decades as a finish? It wasn't in every match, but it felt like that was another running theme through almost every match, though. It felt like, anyway, now that I'm thinking about it, it felt like it was a lot of times throughout the night that it was just a lot of no selling of moves that would probably knock out or kill some people. You know, the lack of selling in general has always been a problem with wrestling. But let's dive into Becky and Charlotte again, because I'm trying to keep myself on track here because there's just so many thoughts running through my brain after the pay-per-view. The Charlotte and Becky thing, again, stiff, good to great chemistry. This may be you never know. This could be the last time you see these two compete. If Charlotte somehow over the next year decides she wants to go to, you know, somewhere else, take some time off, AEW, just asks for the release of her contract, whatever it may be, you know, this could be the last time Becky and Charlotte entangle for a while. Could be. We'll see. But they have great chemistry. I don't believe that at any point did this really turn into a shoot. I really don't. I wanted to believe, but as human beings, we know right away whether something's kind of real or phony or there's something not right. And for the most of the match, I mean, Charlotte and Becky were relatively controlled. There were no bloody lips that I could see anyway. I'm sure some of them were bumped and bruised, but there was nothing that would have indicated, okay, somebody took a real shot there. So if anybody out there is wondering, my thoughts are that this was a controlled, stiff, tried to make it look like a shoot fight. And they did the best they could with what they knew they had and the hype that they had, and that was people knowing about the inner workings and the backstage stuff that went on with Becky and Charlotte and the words Becky had. And at one point, Charlotte was saying the S word to Becky very audibly on camera. Talk your blank, you know, and apparently that's a new approved PG word that we can use. Not here on the show, but on WWE product. So overall, I think it was a really good match. You know, no complaints with the match quality, but of course it ends in a roll-up. So, all right, let's move on to the next matchup here. And that was the 5-on-5 men's traditional Survivor Series elimination match with Seth, Finn, Kevin Owens, Austin Theory, Bobby Lashley against Drew, Xavier, Jeff Hardy, Happy Corbin, and Sheamus. And very early on, Kevin Owens decides to abandon his team. Kevin Owens decides to go in for it himself and that he is more important than the team, and he ends up leaving. Now, the crowd was not happy with this, and rightfully so. You know, I would be disappointed as well, but they're really trying to just make Kevin Owens a bad guy, that Kevin Owens has said many times himself that if you want me to be that guy, I'm going to be that guy. And so he doesn't perform at all. No wrestling at all from Kevin Owens. And, you know, again, on one hand, I understand. On one hand, I'm a bit disappointed. But this all just stems back to KO was out of here January 30th from everything I've seen and heard. KO's out of here. And I really am excited to see him go. Because if this is the kind of stuff that we're going to see where he's not even on pay-per-views anymore because they're trying to use the cover role, he's a bad guy. He's trying to piss you off. Well, yeah, but at the same time, you could have done something more with him, actually had him be on in the matchup and still made him a heel that way. But anyway, so that's what we got to start the match, which, of course, gave Raw a disadvantage right from the beginning. And, you know, overall, this matchup was, it was fine. Raw defeated SmackDown with Seth Rollins as the sole survivor. The big story coming out of this really was two things. Number one, the double count out of McIntyre and Lashley, which really, really angered the Brooklyn crowd. And WWE seemed to find ways to really piss off the Brooklyn crowd last night through their booking. And not on purpose, but if I was in the arena and I paid good money, not only did I not see The Rock, I got roll-up victories on a pay-per-view. I got a lot of countouts on this pay-per-view, and two guys that you wanted to see definitively win or lose in Lashley and McIntyre, of which both of them were counted out. I think in an effort to protect them, WWE didn't want to have somebody just flat out beat them. So they were eliminated both via double countout, although McIntyre did hit a Claymore on Austin Theory, I think it was, or Seth Rollins. And I mean, it was fine, but at that point, the crowd was like, well, he's out of the matchup. So the big story was that. Number two, Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy has really just been getting big reaction after big reaction after big reaction. And it's well-deserved because I think Jeff Hardy was on a hell of a losing streak for like 8 months, 12 months. He was Intercontinental Champion for a while in 2020 and then fell off a cliff and was in the abyss for a while. And since, I don't know, last month or two has really just resurrected himself. And the crowd has a lot to do with that. He has been just a joy to watch. And I said this in my Discord chat on Patreon, which, by the way, if you want to join our Discord server and Discord chat during any of these pay-per-views, you go just join Patreon and you'll get a ad-free experience as well as the Discord server available to you. It's available anytime, but specifically during pay-per-views is the most fun. But one of the points I made in that chat was this could be the very last big run that Jeff Hardy has. Now, whatever this big run is, we don't know. Perhaps it does involve a stop at the Island of Relevancy with Roman Reigns, in which it's a close but no cigar type of scenario with Jeff, which is really an earmark of his entire career. I mean, that's just a microcosm of everything that Jeff has done. It's like, so close, but no cigar, right? So close. And I think that's going to be the case if Roman Reigns ends up facing Jeff Hardy for the Universal Championship. Maybe a day one, but I think Brock Lesnar is probably going to be in the equation there. I think that Jeff Hardy may get a championship match on SmackDown in between now and then because we don't have a pay-per-view until January 1st, 2022. There is no December pay-per-view. Therefore, they have like 6 weeks until the next pay-per-view, which means they got a lot of TV time to fill. They could build to a kind of a midterm program with Jeff and then go to the big program with Roman or Brock Lesnar in day one. But the thing is with that, you know, they would have to say, well, Brock's going to face Roman Reigns for the championship at day one. Then it's all but a foregone conclusion that Jeff doesn't win in the interim, right? Because how could you have the championship match if Jeff wins? So that said, Jeff was just such a delight. The crowd was just so hot for him. I think they recognize that Jeff has got, you know, very limited days in front of him. It was just a feel-good moment for Jeff. You know, you did believe at one point that he could get the victory, but I think the right person did win here in Seth Rollins for his team, because Seth, coming off of a big loss to Edge at Hell in a Cell match, needed it more than Jeff. As fun as it would have been, the crowd would have lost their minds with Jeff winning. I think Seth Rollins was the right one. He needed that victory in a big way, and Seth Rollins you know, got the victory, and it was the correct type of heat to put on the character. You know, you felt robbed by Seth Rollins to have that really feel good moment. You felt completely robbed. And that's what I want. I want Seth Rollins to continue to build heat like that. So the other thing is Sheamus was the one who filled in. I think I made that call. So tooting my own horn, that Sheamus would have been the fill-in. Regardless, though, Sheamus, I think, was physical as he always is. My God, Sheamus is so physical inside the ring. And Austin Theory lasted way deeper into the match than I think most of us thought. Way deeper. And that's fine. You know, I think that Austin Theory has a nice future ahead of him. He's got a nice heel gimmick going on. He looks like a total jerk. That's good. His selfie thing that he does, all of it's good stuff. And it's, you know, it's not like a Tyler Breeze selfie deal with like a fuzzy, stick that he attaches the phone to, whatever, your selfie stick. It's just a way that's super obnoxious. And I think it's well done. So, all right, moving on to the 25-man Battle Royal. This was, I don't know how I didn't see this one coming. I know that I would, during my preview show with Ashley, didn't have a list of all the people that were involved in the 25-man Battle Royal. Therefore, I picked Sami Zayn to win. But had I seen Omos's name, I think that I would have gone with him, because who the hell else would have eliminated him? He was dominant. I think he had, 8 eliminations? He took some offense, the most offense he's taken in quite a while. I would like to see him, you know, at some point leave his feet. He is the most dominant I've ever seen anyone be pushed in WWE. Even when Braun Strowman was first coming up, it didn't seem like they were making him this dominant for this long. I mean, I do want to see somebody, maybe Randy Orton can end an RKO out of nowhere on him. But right now, he's so dominant, it's almost not believably dominant. And I'm not saying they're doing a bad job with him. I think that they've done a nice job with Omos. He is still limited in the ring given his size. That's to be expected. But I do believe that they're making him a little bit too dominant, to the point where it's like, well, then if Randy Orton can't do anything, Matt Riddle can't do anything, who could possibly take down Omos then? Who's there? You know, like you're not leaving us anybody. So is he just going to train through, you know, everyone? Is he just going to railroad everybody? So, I mean, at some point, they're going to have somebody at least get him to leave his feet. And I think Randy Orton would be a nice matchup there, one-on-one with Omos. And hitting an RKO, you could hit an RKO out of nowhere from behind on Omos. And I want to see what that looks like. He hasn't taken a finish yet. He's taken minimal offense. So, I don't know. I want a little more offense being put on him. We never got the Commander Aziz Omos moment either. I was a little bit sad about that. He did eliminate Commander Aziz, but we didn't have that kind of stare down that I was hoping for. Now, he had it with, was it Veer or Shanky, one of them? And that, you know, that was kind of like, okay, they're the same size. I get it. But I wanted to see Commander Aziz and Omos kind of do a stare off. I think that would have been also a little bit of fun. But the real story here was all about Omos, 100%. And yes, we also got a little bit of pizza involved there. Unfortunately, Otis did eat the slice of pizza, which I thought was going to transform him back into the old Otis. And he got eliminated as well. And people were throwing, Montez Ford was throwing a ton of pizza into the crowd, to which in our Discord chat, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of an insight into it. We were saying, who the hell is eating this pizza? I mean, you had these guys sweaty, working with other guys, and Lord knows what they've touched, and they're throwing pizza into the crowd, and I'm sure people are fighting over this pizza. Who's eating it? I want to talk to somebody who's eating that pizza. I mean, they should just throw you a bottle of antibiotics with it, because I don't know. I maybe because I'm like a germaphobe. I don't like people drinking out of my drinks or touching my food, which, again, it gives me like anxiety thinking about that pizza, people eating that pizza. Like, what? Who's doing this? Who is doing this? You know, gross, just gross. But Omos did win. And, you know, Sami Zayn obviously was eliminated fairly deep into the match, but not in the final final five or anything like that. So All right, let's continue on here to the Raw Tag Team Champions, RK-Bro, versus the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos. Boy, this was a long match. It felt really long. And again, I don't know if I'm complaining or not. I just haven't been exposed to such long matches in so long. It was just different. To keep my attention on this match for so long was a little bit difficult because there were some slow points. That's to be expected too, but the length felt very, very long. But overall, very good match. And it's exactly what you expected from these four individuals, absolute professionals. Riddle is a beast in the ring. I mean, this guy's a machine. This guy's got such a bright future in the company. Really, really enjoy his work. He's got just an endless tank of cardio. I mean, it's incredible. Randy Orton, I'm sure, loves being in a tag team to some degree with Riddle, because Riddle's doing 80% of the work in the tag team match, getting beat up, taking the bumps, dishing out the offense, trying to tag Randy. They pull him back. Randy was, I mean, it felt like 20% of the time he was in the ring. So, hey, it of course extends the shelf life of Randy Orton. And you also get to see Riddle in the ring, which is always just such a joy. And again, really good stuff here. I enjoy a lot of super kicks, of course. So here's a little bit of the just description of the match as per CBSSports.com, because I want to make sure that I don't miss anything. I'm not going to read the whole thing, just half of the paragraph here. The Usos eventually managed to get back in control before Orton with a double super kick, hitting Orton with a double super kick, and then one to a reeling Riddle for a near fall before Riddle bridged his way out of the pin. Orton used a blind tag to get himself back in the match. When Jimmy didn't realize Orton was the legal man, he went for a splash on Orton, but Orton slid back into the ring and turned the splash into an RKO for the victory. This was a great finish, and CBS Sports does say that too. Orton manages to pull out an incredible RKO from time to time. This one was incredible, and you know, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't, but it's also due to the camera angle. They had a very tight shot. It wasn't a macro shot of the ring, so had it been, you would have seen Orton slip into the ring, and everybody in attendance obviously did, but since they were focused just on Jimmy Uso, so like tied up on him, when Randy Orton came out of nowhere, everybody at home felt like he came out of nowhere, but everybody in the arena was like, oh yeah, we saw him come into the ring, we saw that coming, right? So it's all perception, and the eyes are provided by the cameras to us at home. So it was well done, enjoyed the RKO, no complaints here, nobody takes a step down here. Both guys, both teams could have afforded a loss. I was wrong in this prediction. I think I did choose RK-Bro. Did I? I don't know. I remember going back and forth with Ashley and saying that both of these teams could have afforded a loss. Both of them don't need a victory. It was just going to be an excellent match, and it was. It really was. This was really good. I'm sure that the Usos will absolutely get hell from Roman Reigns, but this was really well done. Great, great match. Okay, then we get to the women's match. Team Raw, which was Bianca, Rhea, Liv, Carmella, Zelina, and Team SmackDown, which was Sasha, Shotzi, Shayna, Natalya, and Toni Storm. Let me read a little bit of CBS Sports, because I wrote some notes, but I want to make sure that I did not miss anything, because this match overall, to me, felt sloppy. Not from start to finish, but there were some periods where it wasn't great. It was a little confusing. And so here's what I'll say. Carmella was quickly eliminated when she was distracted while having Vega attempt to put her mask on, allowing Storm to score a, say it with us folks, roll up. Team SmackDown came out as a unified front, but Banks and Shotzi struggled to coexist once the match was fully going. Ripley countered the Karafuta clutch, but Shotzi ran in to make the save before Ripley could hit Riptide, leading to the spot in the match where all competitors run in at a time to hit a move. A much-anticipated showdown between Belair and Banks followed that proved a good stretch of action before Storm was able to score another elimination, pinning Vega, and Storm was eliminated by Liv Morgan after Oblivion a moment later, and Liv Morgan was able to fight off Baszler. Okay, pause there. The Bianca Belair and Banks showdown, the stare down, was fun. The crowd felt it. We felt it at home. They're so good together. Bianca is so good with anybody. but especially with Sasha Banks, just so well done there, and I am always just a joy to watch them together. At some point, we'll see them one on one again, and again, Belair ends up in a four-on-one situation, but we did have Sasha Banks get counted out because of her own teammates tired of dealing with her nonsense. And this was, you know, a way to protect Sasha by not having her also get beaten by Bianca. But it was a nice way to get the crowd behind Bianca because she's outnumbered 4-1, ultimately 3-1. Banks, or rather Belair, managed to eliminate Natalya with, say it with us, a roll up, and then Baszler by slamming her face first. And boy, Baszler, what the hell has happened to Shayna Baszler? You remember the woman that eliminated everybody from the Women's Elimination Chamber match? I mean, just steamrolled everyone. Yeah, that woman. I'm old enough to remember her. And now she's just getting beaten by moves that aren't even finish maneuvers. I mean, I was excited when she was starting to snap people's arms like Eva Marie and Nia Jax. But of course, looking back, that wasn't to help Shayna. That was to help WWE write off Eva and Nia, who were about to get fired. Because after that, she stopped. You know, so that's it's really unfortunate. So there was really no plan for Shayna. She's being used as a tool by management to write people off, not build Shayna Baszler back up. Which is just, it sucks because I want to see Shayna Baszler be Shayna Baszler, be the MMA badass queen of spades that is dangerous in the ring. And right now she's losing at back into a funk. So, all right, let's go back here to the description. We're almost done. I promise story time is almost over here. Belair managed to finish things off with a KOD. And get the victory coming back from the 4-on-1 at disadvantage. And here's the take on this match. The Banks elimination was a real stain on the match. Otherwise, it operated well, especially with the recognition of Belair deserving the last woman standing. Well, yeah, she did deserve it, I guess. I mean, to get Belair back into the momentum category was needed. I think Belair did need this victory. So, overall, it was a fine match. I think the men's match was a little bit better. This is a good way to put it, that Banks being eliminated the way she was a stain, just as Drew and Lashley being eliminated was a stain on the match. Wasn't great. So, then we get to, I want to make sure I get to this correctly, the main event. And Big E versus Roman Reigns. And for all the crap I talk about Big E, and I talk a lot of crap about Big E, the guy can go. The guy is just a professional in the ring. He is very good from bell to bell. He's a monster of a man, muscle-wise. But he can do things and does do things he shouldn't be able to. Now, one thing he does do that he should not do just because he can is that suicide dive to the outside of the ring. It's going to ultimately be the downfall, injury-wise, for himself or his opponent. I mean, it looked like Roman Reigns and or him almost got injured on that maneuver. I mean, that's a lot of body weight being thrown to the outside of the ring. And I was not a big fan of that maneuver. I never have been. I always cringe, not in embarrassment, just worried about the safety of both guys. Big E doesn't need to do that. He doesn't need to dive through the second rope. It's unnecessarily dangerous. His character doesn't need to do it. It's a risk that you don't need to take. It's a tough bump. Even if it's done correctly and safely, perfectly, it's still a tough bump to take, which takes mileage off of your body, or puts mileage on your body, rather. It's always been so dangerous to me, and I don't need to see it. It's scary, I gotta say that. But that said, we got a really good match here. I enjoyed the hell out of this matchup. Big E did look very strong. And the rock bottom by Roman Reigns was absolutely a wink and a nod to things coming down the line. And I do believe now that Rock and Roman is happening this year. I've not seen reports. I've checked The Rock's Twitter feed. He's not dropping any hints. this to me was a wink and a nod, one of the wink and the nods. And I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, we'll have to see if tonight on Monday Night Raw, as I record this now, it's Monday morning. But I think that we will see The Rock in Brooklyn tonight. So we'll see if I'm right. Depends on when you're listening to this, if I was or not. Just, I do think it's going to be a fun program. But of course, you have Brock Lesnar also out there. So how does Rock, or rather Roman, clean up the Brock situation and also get onto The Rock? I think it's actually pretty simple. You end the program with Brock Lesnar at Royal Rumble or day one. You could end it at the day one pay-per-view. And then The Rock swoops right in either tonight and drops a seed and you don't see him till Royal Rumble or day one, and leading to a few month build between Rock and Roman there. So even though it's kind of overlapping between Brock and Rock and Roman, they could make this work because both guys are not there every week and it's very easy. And you could have Jeff Hardy in the interim. You could have Jeff Hardy as the guy that's there every week, be able to work with Roman. So I think this is a pretty clear cut path for me. And now I do believe they're not going to wait until 39. I do believe it'll be this year at WrestleMania 38. There's just too much evidence to the contrary, and people are going to be really pissed off if it doesn't happen. So the other thing I'll say before I get a little bit more into this matchup with some final thoughts, Vince McMahon on TV is it's kind of uncomfortable. Vince McMahon on TV is not enjoyable. Him on TV is just kind of weird now. Like, you see flashes of the old Vince, but he seems at times, kind of unintelligible, where he mumbles things or says things that don't make sense. And he's talking about things that are just irrelevant. And why does he even have this $100 million egg? And if it's so valuable, what the hell is it doing on your desk? Okay, what? How is this your idea to bring The Rock back? Because I think ultimately that's what we're getting to. Somehow The Rock stole it. I don't know. Who cares? But an Easter egg? What? I did enjoy Corey Graves wink and a nod too when he said, you know, like, nothing good comes when somebody brings a giant egg to Survivor Series. That was funny because if you remember, well, you may or may not, if you're an old enough fan, you will, or maybe you've seen clips of it, the gobbledygooker. This was in the late 80s, early 90s. The gobbledygooker was the giant egg that was hatched at Survivor Series in one of the worst storylines of all time in WWE. So Corey Graves winking a nod to that was pretty clever, and I enjoyed that. So props to Corey Graves there. And of course, we get another egg here with Vince. Makes kind of no sense, but maybe ultimately it will. Who knows? The thing is, with Vince coming back to what, carry around a $100 million egg, you know that there's something big looming. He didn't just come back to do that, presumably. And furthermore, what are people doing cheering for people getting out of limos? Is there just like a set crowd there to cheer on people who exit limos backstage, a set amount of wrestlers who are assigned that night to just stand there and cheer for whoever steps out of a limousine? I've never, ever, ever seen anybody stand there and cheer for Vince. Maybe I missed it. Maybe it's possible that people were cheering for Vince because he got this $100 million egg by winning something, and they knew that this limo was Vince's, and therefore they were just applauding Vince. Maybe. Either way, it was weird that when Vince stepped out of the limo, everyone's just cheering. So it's possible I missed something there. So I really was kind of just weirded out by that, but we'll have to see where this leads. Of course, we'll have answers in just a few hours here on Monday Night Raw. But, you know, let's get back to the matchup here. Big E tried for the big ending. Roman Reigns slipped out, stomped on Big E's knee, and hit one final spear for the win. CBS Sports called it a very good match overall, with Big E showing tremendous fight despite losing the match. And if Big E wasn't going to get the win, that's the best way to go about it. Yeah, look, even in a loss here, Big E won. That's always the goal. It should be the goal. Even in a loss, you win. And I think Big E did. This could have been Big E's best main event matchup to date. I believe it was. And you know, props go to both guys. Roman Reigns getting the clean victory was nice. I think it was great. It's exactly what should have happened. And Big E was not the guy to get the victory there. That's the correct choice. So they got that right. They got that 100% right. So Roman Reigns continues his undefeated streak since SummerSlam of 2020. He continues his title reign 449 days now. This is going to be a fun Monday Night Raw in Brooklyn. It feels kind of like the Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania in a way. I'm very interested to see how the crowd reacts to everyone, especially when Roman Reigns comes out. Presumably, I know he's on SmackDown, but we were told all rosters, everybody from all rosters are going to be on Monday Night Raw. So I'm going to forego the complaints about the brands overlapping and brand rules and, you know, all the draft rules. If it's to get to Rock returning tonight, I'm on board. So let me know what you guys think, though. I'm interested to hear what you think about the pay-per-view, what your thoughts were. Did you enjoy it? Did you not? Were you confused? You know, ultimately, I'd give this pay-per-view like a B-minus, kind of a C-plus B-minus, where it's like, yeah, it was okay. Yeah, I thought it was okay. I know a lot of people thought it was hashtag trash, but I really didn't. I thought that there was really good efforts made, and this is how you forego terrible storylines and forced rivalries, is by having people care about the individual stars. Nobody cares about the rivalry. They want to see the stars compete with each other. And that is, to me, what the focus was here. We didn't care about brand supremacy. Fans never do, never did, never will. Fans care about the stars on those brands, which makes the brand rivalry even less relevant and less, even more confusing why they do it. So it's all about the stars, always will be. And we are now past Survivor Series, and we can get to our normal schedule of normal pay-per-views. And day one is up next. So everybody, thank you so much for joining me here. You can go on Patreon and join us there for $1 a month. You get all these benefits. Or on Apple Podcasts, subscribe there for ad-free. Everything is there for you. 7 days free also on Apple Podcasts. So everybody, thanks so much. I'll be back. When am I coming back? Tuesday for your Raw review. But tonight I'll be doing a From the Vault version of What If. As it's Thanksgiving week, we're kind of, you know, loosening up some shows from new content, but I'll be doing a From the Vault version of the What If show. Raw will be brand new. Wednesday is going to be brand new with the mailbag, and the rest of the week is as scheduled. So everybody, thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.